With the Citi Business Advantage Platinum Select World MasterCard, you can turn Staples and more into a new adventure when you earn American Airlines Advantage miles on all your business purchases, from office supplies to airline tickets to car rentals. Find out more at citi.com/fly.
Blog Talk Radio.
Today on the big show, we get an early start on Fright Night when I look at the unlucky 13 best black horror films of all time. And from Blackula to Tales in the Hood, with a variety of films in between, find out if your favorite scared its way onto the list. Plus, we'll have entertainment news and reviews with the infamous Movie Mob and Black Films' Wilson Morales, all on the latest episode of Keeping It Real with Film Gordon. Rabbit, it's gonna be a good show.
Now let's start the show. Step out of the cold. We come from the cold. To the top of the globe. The pits and the holes. The folks and the stones. Whoever you ride for, we back for some more. Get back to the show. You know.
Good afternoon and welcome to the latest installment of Keeping It Real with Film Gordon. I am Tim Gordon, and it is a blustery day here in the Northeast in the fall, Thursday, October 20th. Wow, it's the season of hope. And I start off today's show calling it the season of hope because right now, you know, at Cineplexes across the country, you know, there's a lot of standard fare, nothing really standing out. But from what I understand, we need to think that there is a lot of good films still coming down the pike. You know, for folks who have seen films like The Eyes of March and Drive and some of the other fare that has been put out this fall, there is still hope. There's a lot of good films that are coming down the pike. And as I said on last week's show, and we'll repeat the refrain all the way up until award season begins, we are less than 2 months away from major critics groups selecting their choices for, you know, best film, best actor, et cetera, and all of the other goodies that come along with that season. As well, the Black Reel Awards are also less than about 7 weeks away. And, you know, having conversations with a lot of my colleagues and critics across the country, this will definitely be a very, very interesting year. So strap in. It's going to be a lot of fun coming up. But today on the big show, we're going to have a lot of fun because everybody else is going to do shows or programming around Halloween, you know, probably either next week or the week after. I wanted to get a head start, and it actually didn't even start off as a Halloween show per se. It started off as I saw that Paranormal Activity Part 3 was coming out. after seeing the first one and the second one, there's no way I'm going to see the third one. But I thought it would be cool to take a look, not at just regular horror movies that are out, but look at some horror films that feature African Americans. And we're going to look at a list that I comprised, or actually expanded on from last year. While I was writing for Jet last year, I wrote a piece called the Five Top Black Horror Films. So I just expanded that list out to 13. And I invited some friends of mine on to kind of talk about and debate some of those films. And that's going to be coming up in the next segment. Also this week, as I said, you know, at the top about the lackluster box office and films that are coming out, Paranormal Activity 3 headlines what looks like to be the laziest slate of scheduled films probably being released this year. You know, I think it's Johnny English Reborn, a couple of other films that are coming out. So, as custom, I didn't see any of these movies this weekend, didn't feel a need to have seen any of these films this weekend, but the Movie Mob is going to stop by a little later on to give you their review, and we will have some fun picking apart what's new in theaters this week. In addition to that, it's also been a big week as it relates to news. One of the big stories that came out this week, as we are counting down to the award season, and it, again, just totally because I'm kind of like a big Christopher Nolan fan, but for folks who remember when The Dark Knight was released back in 2008, the campaign, the brilliant marketing campaign I thought Warner Brothers put on for that film, which basically they created almost 12 trailers for it, different trailers. And the thing that I loved about all the trailers that they created is the trailers were all brilliant and well done, but none of them leaked any information about the film, including a prologue where they released the opening scene to show in theaters. And I also understand this week there's word that they're considering creating a prologue or showing a an extended six-minute portion of The Dark Knight Rises, which may be coming in theaters the next couple of months. So I'm really, really looking forward to that. But as always, it is that time. It's 5 minutes after the hour, and it's time for entertainment news. Of course, we go straight to New York to my man, Wilson Morales. Wilson, what's going on, soul brother?
Not much, Dad. What's happening?
Man, you up in the hub of where everything is happening. I'm kind of down here in the nation's capital. You know, it's all politics down here, man. So enlighten the audience, man. You've had a big week. I know you have. I've read the site, man. Tell us what's going on this week in entertainment.
Well, it's not much in the world of African-Americans, you know. It's like over the weekend I went over to the New York Comic Con where they, you know, they had a display of what you probably saw earlier of Red Tails, and
right.
They were able to bring in one of the Tuskegee Airmen, as well as Michael B. Jordan and Leslie Odom Jr., and Aaron Magruder, who for most people already know that he writes The Boondocks. I had no idea that he co-wrote the film.
Wait. Aaron Magruder co-wrote Red Tails?
Yeah, co-wrote Red Tails. That's, you know,
wow.
It's not on many, you know, either you have to look at IMDb or, you know, other places, but I had no idea.
Wow. Neither did I.
You know, so he was there. And at first I was like, who's that? It was Ed Skarin. And I'm like, Aaron who? And I was like, Aaron Magruder. And it just embalmed me because I guess I'm thinking, you know, Boondocks Animated and Red Tails are totally different and separate from each other.
Okay, so here's my question for you, man, off the cuff. You, I'm sure you've watched episodes of the Boondocks. What do you think, don't you think that's a curious choice, man? Not that he can't write, but don't you think that's a curious choice to get that guy to co-write a film about real-life Tuskegee Airmen, real-life American heroes?
Yeah, you know, but apparently, you know, we don't always know anything about individuals. And, you know, apparently he's been following this for a period of time, and obviously he knows John Ridley and evidently a number of key people that they brought him on board. And I guess if his name hasn't been mentioned in so many places as a co-writer, he probably came in and probably punched up a few lines, you know. I'm assuming maybe, like, it's like a Quentin Tarantino, like whenever you watch a movie and there's a line or two in there and then you see that Tarantino was one of the uncredited screenwriters, you could probably think of that line or so. So my guess is when we're watching, whenever we get to watch Red Tails, if there's a line in there that you would think that, okay, John Ridley doesn't write like this, then you could probably say Aaron threw that in there.
All right, so now you've also said that John Ridley is also a co-writer of Red Tails.
Well, again, John Ridley wrote most of it.
Wow. Okay, well, you know what? I like John Ridley, and I, you know, been a fan of his work, liked his books as well. So that makes me feel a little better because I'm thinking they had some unnamed writer and Aaron Magruder. I was like, ooh.
Yeah, it's John Ridley. So this is a pretty much an all-black affair because how often do we get any black screenwriters in a major motion picture, you know?
No, I'm with you, man. I'm with you. So what else is happening this week, man?
They just released a trailer to Chronicle. Joseph stars Michael B. Jordan, and it comes out next year. And, you know, obviously from the last time we spoke, you know, they decided to release Power Heist in theaters and skip the whole VOD process.
right, which made Brett Ratner amazingly happy and also had all of the bootleggers swearing out loud.
You know, it's like, you know, it's like you're inviting them to bootleg this movie. It's like, you know, it's like, and then this week I saw Paranormal Activity, which I don't think it's being screened for critics. They've done these select screenings for the fans, and I happen to be a part of that as a fan. So that's coming out this week, as well as Three Musketeers. So I think this week there's a bunch of films they weren't screened for critics.
Right, and I opened the show by saying that this is probably one of the most lackluster weeks for major releases this year. Everything opened cold. Now, for the Three Musketeers to open cold on a weekend, when they put it on this weekend, gives you an indication of what they think about what audiences will think about this film.
Oh, yeah, they probably figure, hey, you know what? See it at your own risk. You know, they rather, they probably think they're not going to get the best of reviews. So they'll just screen it cold, you know, put it out there. And if it makes money, hey, so be it. You know, Disney's riding on the success of Real Steel, so maybe they're going to make another success with this movie.
Now, Wilson, we got about 3 minutes left, man. And I'll open the show by saying that, you know, while there's not a lot of stuff, I mean, The Ides of March, Drive have been movies that I think really stand out so far in the fall. I think that part of what critics and people such as ourselves are looking forward to are some of the films that are coming, you know, later this month into next month as we get closer and closer to award season. But the caveat, and I'm trying to prepare the audience, man, and I'm going to probably talk to you and some of the other principals who operate African-American sites around the country, is this is going to be a very different award season as it relates to African-Americans, man. What are your thoughts on that from what you've seen so far this year?
Well, I think we're in a situation where, once again, there's not enough films that's featuring black talent, but at the same time, the Academy is already going out of its way to recognize, you know, black talent, you know, by having Eddie host the Oscars, and they're giving this year's Gene Humanitarian Award to Oprah Winfrey. And I think either Viola or Octavia Spencer, one of them will be nominated for the help. They don't want another blackout. One of them will be nominated. And if you can get a documentary in there somehow, you know, that's enough for them to say, okay, we got something in there for them.
Well, the documentary that I think probably has the best shot, and I'm not sure if you had an opportunity to see it yet, is the one that Jamie Foxx put his name on, Thunder Soul, which has really been generating a lot of buzz, man.
True. It could get a lot of buzz. I think, you know, it's roadside attractions. They have to do a lot to keep promoting that movie. And as opposed to any documentaries that may come out from Sony Pictures Classics, you know, sometimes it's a matter of who the distributor is and can they get it to enough people to vote.
Yeah, man. But let me also reiterate, when I say it's a very different year, I guess what I'm really saying, that you may have said it already, so I don't want to be redundant, but there have not been a lot of major studio releases this year, and they're gonna. And when we do awards a little later on, your organization as well as mine, they're gonna be films, man, that a lot of people in the general public may not be familiar with some of these performances this year.
No, but I think in the actor category, you're gonna get a lot of the high caliber stars. I think George Clooney has a shot of being nominated for Descendants, Brad Pitt for either Tree of Life or Moneyball. You know, just two names alone. I think, speaking prematurely, I think you have Meryl Streep in the running, Viola Davis, Michelle Williams for My Week with Marilyn, Glenn Close for Albert Nobbs. So you're going to see a lot of big names in there. I don't think this is going to be the year of the indies.
No. I was talking about as it related to African Americans,
It can be outside of maybe Viola and Octavia. I think that's about it. I don't see any other performance. Jeffrey Wright had a minuscule role in The Ides of March.
Yes. Right. Yeah, and The Source Code as well early this year. So.
Yes, anyway, I forgot about that one.
But no, Wilson. But hey, man, as I tell you all the time, man, brother, you are on it, man. So, you know, I know you got stuff coming up. I'm going to look forward to it, man. Let's stay in the loop, bro, and I will definitely talk to you next week.
Okay, we'll talk later. Take care.
All right, Wilson. You do the same. And that was my man, Wilson Morales, who keeps us on point every week as it relates to entertainment. Hey, Scoop, you can follow him. I call him Scoop Wilson. You can follow Wilson over at blackfilm.com. He's got some amazing stories over there. And, you know, I support and love this guy dearly. It is now 14 minutes after the hour. We're going to take a break, and we're going to come back and talk about some of the top black horror films of all time as we count down to Fright Night in 2 weeks here on The Big Show. We'll be right back.
I put a spell on you. Because you're mine. Stop the things you do. What's up?
Keeping it real with Film Gordon. The time is 16 minutes after the hour. Welcome back to The Big Show. I'm going to open up the phone lines as well. I know we're going to have some folks that are coming on shortly to talk about some of these films. I created a list, as I said, last year, what I call my five favorite black horror films. And this year I've expanded that list to what I call the unlucky 13 of these films. So I'm going to run the list down momentarily, but let me give you the phone number to find out if you agree with our list, if you disagree with the list, if your favorite film didn't make the cut, or if there's a film that's out there that you think we may have missed. Hey, I'm listening. The number is 347-324-5142, 347-324-5142. And without any further ado, I'm going straight to my man down in Charlotte, who is the owner and editor of the BlackBoxOffice.com, Dow Lockhart. Dow, welcome to the show, man.
All right. Good to be with you as always, man. How's it going?
Hey, brother, it is going, man. So I'm going to run down what I call the unlucky 13, the top or the best black horror films, at least in my estimation. There are a couple more that could have made my list and get some honorable mention, but we'll talk about that in a moment.
Okay.
And these films are in no particular order, Dow.
Okay, I'm going to ask. You know, I'm going to ask that.
No particular order, man. Starting off, I'm going to go with the 1990 little scene classic, Death by Temptation, starring, written, and produced, and I think directed as well by James E. Bond,
yes.
That featured a very young Samuel L. Jackson, Kadeem Hardison, story about a female succubus who literally was combing the clubs in New York, taking dudes home, and just, well, you know the rest. But it was a scary movie to me at that point because I was out there hanging out in the streets. I was like, man, something like that could happen, dog.
That's the part of that movie that scared you, the realism?
Yeah, man. Now, also on my list, because I'm sharing a little too much about me right now, also on the list is a film from 1995 directed by Rusty Cundiff that I really dig a lot, man. And I think that it was a very well-put-together story, and that film, of course, is Tales from the Hood. One of the biggest surprises in that film to me was the performance, believe it or not, of David Alan Greer as, quote-unquote, the monster in one of the segments, man. Very, very important, you know, horror film as it relates to African-Americans. Number three on the list, little young Jada Pinkett, before she became Jada Pinkett Smith, little Jada Pinkett starred in one of the Tales of the Crypt series films, and this one was Demon Knight. Which is really interesting to me, Dow, because you don't see a lot of heroines in these horror films that literally kick butt, you know, and get it done and survive. And
that's a good
Jada
point.
She was money, man, in that film. So that one really stands out to me as well. For the fourth film on the list, I go back to 1972. And William Marshall, of course, created the iconic character, Blackula. And I think it spawned maybe one or two sequels. I know at least one sequel. I'm not sure if there was a second sequel.
There were definitely two sequels, yes.
Thank you. See, that's why I like having you around, man. You validate my smartness.
Well, in my own defense, William Marshall is a Star Trek alumni, which is probably the only reason why I even know about those films.
All right, well, cool. Now, also on this list is Glenn Turman. Before he was Colonel Taylor on A Different World, starred in J.D.'s Revenge, and around that same time, Cooley High. But J.D.'s Revenge, man, I remember going to the theater to see that as a kid. Boy, that scared me.
That was scary.
Good.
Yeah, I went on J.D.'s Revenge. That was insane.
Now, watch this. You'll love this. In 1974, you know, in the 70s, we had this bad habit down of whenever mainstream Hollywood would make a movie, they'd make an African-American version to kind of like, you know, mimic the one that was already made. So
right.
When The Exorcist came out, you know, we had to create a story about a woman who had a demon in her, hence Abby. Starring Carol Speed, Abby made the big list. Now, this next film, man, I'm going to be perfectly honest, is not the best film, but it is scary in some points and will probably get to an audience. Yeah. It stars Marky Bay, and I'm not sure if you are familiar with Sugar Hill. And I'm not talking about the Wesley Snipes, Michael Wright Sugar Hill from 1995 or whatever that period. This is the Sugar Hill from 1974.
Okay, I think you got me on this one.
Yeah, Sugar Hill, man. I've watched that. The effects didn't age well. It looks a little cheesy, but it has some issues that is really, really scary to me. Also on the list, you say his name three times, Tony Todd will rip your throat out as the Candyman from 1992.
Now, Tony Todd is the king of this genre. You got to
right.
So I know you're not going in order, but Candyman would be pretty much towards the top of my list.
All right, okay, well, that's cool. Now, this next movie I'm going to mention is so little known, you probably know about it, but I would venture that the majority of the audience has never heard of the vampire film Ganja and Hess that I think was released in either 74 or 75, man. It doesn't play that often, but if you get an opportunity to see that, you need to check it out, man. Very intelligently well-done film for that period, man. It shouldn't even be called blaxploitation. Very good movie.
Right. I've seen Ganja and Hess.
You have to.
I have to give it to you. I have to agree on that. That was a suggestion back when I was in New York from Kim's Video, which was an obscure video store downtown. That is the only place I've ever known that has actually had a copy of Ganja and Hess, and that's where I saw it.
Cool. Now, this next movie, man, is a film from this decade and was nominated and I think won a Black Reel Award with us either in 2003 or 2004. Directed by Eric LaSalle, starring him and Michael Beach. This film tore it up on the film festival circuit, and rightfully so, Crazy as Hell. That last line, did you ever see Crazy as Hell?
I did see Crazy as Hell. I did not like
it. Oh, come on, man. You didn't like the last line where I think it was something about, you know, I can't even remember what it was, but after the transformation and you figure out what's going on, I like this movie, man. I mean, you know, okay. Well, I'm going to let you have that one because I respect you. If you didn't like it, I would respect that you didn't like it, but I thought it
was fine. I appreciate
now this,
that, yeah.
Now, this next movie, again, didn't think it was the greatest movie, but it had some wonderful effects, and I thought, you know, even though I thought the casting was just buck wild, just crazy, but Bones with Snoop Dogg and Pam Grier, I still have a hard time even saying Bone, you know, the two of these guys together, because there's no way that those two would be a kind of couple in any movie ever. But, you know, I give it to Bones. I put Bones on the list for that point. And then complete silence over there.
It's worth it as a mention.
Okay. The last two films, man, you know, when the Scream franchise came out and was really hot, as I said earlier when we talked about Abby, we mimicked what's going on in mainstream, created a story called Holla. So somebody
yes.
said, well, why Holla? I said, Scream, Holla. Scream, Holla. And last but not least, man, on the 13 films, is a film from Wes Craven. It's from early 1991 when, you know, African Americans were really in style with Spike Lee and John Singleton and Mario Van Peebles. Well, Wes Craven put his African American spin out there in a horror film called People Up Under the Stairs. And if you didn't get a chance to see that, that is one of the few times that Ving Rhames really got it in a really nasty way in that film, man. So let the second guessing begin, because people will say, well, what happened to Vampire in Brooklyn? No. What happened to, I mean, so Vampire in Brooklyn to me just didn't work, man. I Eddie Murphy's accent was off. I thought Angela Bassett was miscast. It just didn't work, man. But I prepared. So you've gotten my list down. What did you think?
Yeah. See, it's funny that you bring up Vampire in Brooklyn, because that's exactly where I was going to go. If you're going to start a conversation off with Death by Temptation, And your justification for not putting Vampire in Brooklyn on was cast didn't exactly click. This is Death by Temptation is a film that has such classic cameo appearances as Freddie Jackson in the show.
And Velma Moore. And not
Velma Moore, right? But Freddie Jackson's cameo is the best, because his line is, who this, right? That's Freddie Jackson's contribution to Death by Temptation. And,
oh, man.
But your thing is that Eddie Murphy's accent is off in Vampire in Brooklyn. I think that something else could have got bumped off the list. Vampire in Brooklyn deserves to be on this list because you led with Death by Temptation. Now, that is why I asked if this was in order of importance or in greatness of film, because
right.
If it's just a random list, okay, I'll give it to you. But Vampire in Brooklyn should have been on there because of the same question. If Bones can make your list?
No, I feel you, man. I feel you. But no, hold on. I think we got a caller, man. Hold on one second.
All right.
Hold on a second. Okay, welcome to the show, man. Who am I speaking with?
Hello, gentlemen. Hello, brothers. My name is Salahuddin from New York City. I actually just tuned in. I didn't hear your previous choices except for Blackula and the other one you said, but I don't know if you put it down, but you brothers remember Abby?
Oh, no, Abby made the list.
Abby's on the list.
Oh, man. See, I'm a Johnny come lately, man. I'm a Johnny.
No. Let me run it.
I was
going to run it down for you one more time. I had Death by Temptation, Tales from the Hood, Tales from the Crypt, Demon Night, Blackula, JD's Revenge, Abby, Sugar Hill from 1974, Candyman, Ganja and Hess, Crazy as Hell, Bones, Holla, and People Under the Stairs.
Oh, man. I think People Under the Stairs. So did you choose, like, your favorite? Did you, like, have a consensus, agree on one that was, like, number one?
Well, we haven't. I did the list in no particular order. I'm going to let Dal, because I haven't had a chance to listen to what Dal had to say, so he was giving me some feedback, because he thought that Vampire in Brooklyn should have been on the list, and I wasn't feeling Eddie in that one.
I'll be honest with you, bro. I'm not a maven of films, but I didn't dig in too much in that one either. You know, every time I saw Eddie Murphy come on screen, I wanted to laugh. Really, man.
There you go, man. See, I keep trying to tell Dal that, man. Dal ain't listening to me, though, man. All right, brother. So you said you calling from New York?
Yes, brother.
All right, man. Well, thanks for tuning in, man.
All right, my brothers. You have a good one.
All right, brother. You do the same. All right, man. All right, Dal, we got a minute to go, man. I want to take a break right now, man. I'm going to come back. I want to hear what you – because, again, dude, I mean, you know, me and you, we cool like that, man. You don't have to lockstep with me. So I want to hear what you got to say. We will listen to your point of view, and I'm going to also bring on Travis Hobson.
There we go.
as we continue looking at – yeah, that's what I'm talking about. As we continue looking at – the top black horror films of all time. Keep it where you got it. We'll be right back.
Well, I walked into the office. What did I see? A well-shaped body with his back to me. Sitting in a chair, whipping a white gown. She said,
Dana Dane, won't you please lay down?
She said that she wanted to reveal her face. Till my hour was up and I was on my way. Now we got to the matter of why I came there. I said, Doc, I keep having these crazy nightmares. Nightmares of the night.
Your imagination, our reality. Just keep telling yourself that they're make believe. She said, relax yourself, won't you tell me once so I can diagnose and see what must be done. I lay back my head, try to inhale, caught my breath, and then I said, well, right one morning I was late for class. Had a fresh pair of friends with beauty on the glass. Girls, they was hawking, Tuesday was talking, so the doggy dog female like that.
Yes, welcome back to the big show. You know, I had to go get Dana Dane, man. We talk about some scary movies, man. Welcome back to the big show, man. And on live with me, of course, is my man in Charlotte, Dow Lockhart, who is the co-founder. He was the founder, because I'm thinking about your wife, man.
That's the founder of
the BlackBoxOffice.com. And he's online with us, as well as Travis Hobson, who is one of the co-hosts of Punch Drunk Critics, which airs Sunday nights here on, 7 o'clock here on Blog Talk Radio. T-Hop, what's going on, man?
What did you wake me up for? What am I on the show for today?
Daryl, see, this is what I'm talking about, called DC humor right here, man. So go ahead, Daryl, because I'm going to ignore Travis, man. So what did you think about our list? Because Travis has the list as well, man.
I mean, you threw me some curveballs. I think including Abby was important. Including Candyman was important. I think you got to touch on Tony Todd's contribution to the genre in general, right? Like I was saying when you mentioned it, Tony, to me, is like one of the kings in this, man. Like, he's in everything. Right down to the Final Destination film, and this is the guy. So it's like, if there's anything that could be moved around, I would just suggest put a little bit more Tony Todd in there. But you got Candyman on there, so I'm good.
All right, man. Travis Hopkins, man, you got a chance to get a look at the list, man. And Travis was teasing me because, you know, he was like, I got to think of some black horror films. They make black horror films.
No, Daryl's absolutely right about Tony Todd. I mean, he is the man. Candyman has become like one of the most memorable horror movie villains. I mean, he's right up there with Michael Myers and all those guys. And
yeah.
For Tony Todd, I mean, it's helped him, you know, jump to other movies. I mean, like Wishmaster, and I think he was in one of the Hatchet movies too. And of course, Final Destination. I mean, it's done a lot for his career. He's become like the horror guy. All you need to do is show Tony Todd in a movie, and audiences recognize him now. So I think that's really cool. But there was one that you left off, though. I'm surprised that I didn't see it.
A Vampire in Brooklyn?
No, you did know. It is Vampire in Brooklyn, yeah. Of course it's Vampire in Brooklyn.
There are so many.
and you know what's
really funny? Dal and I went through this, man, and I knew I was going to catch some grief, man, because it wasn't like the last time y'all snookered me and I literally forgot a movie. No, I knew about Vampire in Brooklyn. I just thought, and I'll share the same thing I shared with Dal in the last segment, is, man, you know, between Eddie Murphy's bad pompadour, an unworkable accent, you know, the whole thing with him and Angela Bassett, where I thought that she was literally just wasted in this movie. I was like, man, and it was funny because I remember at the time when Eddie was putting this project together, he talked about, you know, his whole fascination with makeup and, you know, wanting to do a vampire movie. And it was like, well, dude, you got to bring a better script, and you just can't bring you to the movie. That movie was a disaster, man.
It's not very good. It's not really good, but I think the script by did Charlie Murphy write that script?
I think
Charlie Murphy wrote that script. I didn't think the script was all that bad. And if you're going to judge a movie based on stuff like that, then you could probably knock off half the movies on this list. I mean, there's some bad performances in all these movies. Death by Temptation, really? I used to watch that when I was 13 and when I wasn't supposed to. And it's not really good either.
Well, no, as I explained to Dow, the justification on why that film made the list is that I was still, like, out there dating at the time, and it hit me more from a social front, because I was like, as I told Dow, I was like, man, something like that could really happen to a dude, man. You at the club, you know?
I was blown away by Kadeem Hardison being in it, because this was, a different world days for him. And I was like, wow, Kadeem Hardison's in this movie. And I think that's what got me into it. But my favorite from the list by far is Tales from the Hood. I think everybody.
Okay, all right, that's what I was going to go to next. So that's your vote as number one. Dow, what is your vote of these films as the number one?
I would have to, and anybody that knows me, you guys are probably going to be surprised to say that I would say the same about Tales from the Hood. It's just like it does what it says on the box, and so for a horror movie, if you're going to go into for something like that, it's just great. It's great fun for that reason. Second would have it's a close second to Candyman. That was just
wow.
Yeah.
No. I'm thinking about Tales from the Hood, and I'm not gonna make it unanimous. I would say Tales from the Hood is my number two. And the thing about Tales from the Hood, and I said this earlier, is that I thought what really worked about Rusty's script or screenplay for this was that it had three different stories, but it was massively woven by the performance of Clarence Williams III, a guy,
yep,
I swear, that does not get enough credit, man, for being such an amazing actor, man. I mean,
I agree.
His role in this film, I mean, if you sit down on one Saturday and watch Sugar Hill, the Wesley Snipes, Michael Wright version, and just watch his character, or him in Deep Cover. I mean, Clarence Williams III is like a beast, man. That guy's a great, great actor, man.
And the comedy range that he displays in Half-Baked.
I was just about to mention Half-Baked.
Clarence Williams III is one of the funniest things in Half-Baked. Everybody's funny. Cuban B, really?
No, I agree. And Tales from the Hood had such a wide cast of recognizable black faces and other people that we don't get to see that often. And each story had its own, like, kind of feel to it, you know. And I really just thought they all came together really, really well.
Now, the only thing I would say, man, and this is not necessarily that I think it's, like, the best, it's better than Tales from the Hood, because I think Tales from the Hood, I would probably concur with both of you gentlemen that I think it is probably the strongest of the titles that are here. But from just a historical importance, man, Blackula has got to get some love, man. It's not the best movie, but you got to remember, Blackula became an iconic horror film at a time when you talk about there's not a lot of them out now. There were nearly none that were out in the early 70s, man.
Blackula gets style points for me because the costuming in Blackula is just jaw-dropping. Like, the turtlenecks, the patterns, everybody's afro is right, but as a film, it's hard to get through, man. It's hard to get through that film. It's very difficult to be in 2011, it's very difficult to sit through one sitting of Blackula without pausing. I'm just saying, I'm going to put it out there.
You can't sit through Prince Mama Walde, man, with the amazing William Marshall. As well as the fine Lynette McKee. Come on, really?
I'm just putting it out there.
No, I'm being sarcastic.
Right.
Blackula didn't age well, man, but I'm just looking at that, you know. It's like, I mean, but let's be realistic, man. I mean, if you want to talk about movies not aging well, we all agree that Sidney Poitier is a pioneer. Have you gone back and tried to watch some of those early Sidney Poitier films like A Man Called Hawk or No Way Out? I mean, come on, man. Films don't typically age. I mean, only the great ones, man, that can span span time and be cool at any point. But every movie ain't that movie, D.
But here's the thing. It's funny that you mentioned that, right? Because if you think of, so these are predominantly some mostly black cast in horror movies, right? But
if
you look at African-American contributions to horror films, that's probably its own separate list from, like, Richard Lawson and Poltergeist, which is a pretty worthy contribution, right? He's an important story point in the film. There's an awful lot of us in horror films that don't just get killed off in the early stages of the film that could be its own list, really. So, but the problem with all of those movies is that they don't age well, right? So it's difficult to kind of compile anything else. It's kind of difficult to look at horror as a genre anyway because a lot of these films just don't translate well. That's why they're remaking so many of them.
Let me ask you a question. What was the name of the brother? And I'm gonna get it for you in a second. What about the guy who needs to have honorable mention? Man, is probably one of the most important guys ever. Is Dwayne Jones, a guy that nobody knows who he is, but he literally was the star of George Romero's classic film Night of the Living Dead in 1968. Almost made it through the whole movie. Almost,
man. We had hope.
If they would have stopped the movie 10 minutes earlier, man, that dude could have survived in 68 in a horror movie.
So in your remake, he makes it to the end? Is that how you're going to do it?
Man, come on, man. Come on, man. And the way they finally got him, man, I was like, come on, man. Really?
There's a black dude in The Walking Dead who survived the whole season. So, I mean, maybe we're moving up in the world now. I mean, he'll probably be dead by the end of this season. But we're gaining ground or something, you know.
But, man, all I'm saying, man, is that, you know, Night of the Living Dead is acknowledged, man. I mean, Dawn of the Dead is probably acknowledged now as a better film than Night of the Living Dead. But Night of the Living Dead, man, scared the bejesus out of people in 1968, man.
Yep. That's the problem with a lot of those horror movies, though. They're so mired in their time, all of them, because they all come with a lot of like social baggage and stuff like that. They're all making some sort of commentary, which is why they don't, like you said, they don't age well. They tend, you know, then they have to be remade. So
basically, what we're saying, everybody either has Tales of the Hood number one. In my case, it's probably number one as well, because I would agree with you. I'm just being funny that I think Blackula has got to get some love because of the time period that it came out in the 70s, man, when, you know, it was so progressive, man.
What about the sequel? What was it, Scream Blackula?
Scream Blackula. Scream. Yes. Scream Blackula.
I've actually never seen that one.
Look, I was going to say, or if they would have called it now, Holla Blackula Holla. Nah, man, but I want to thank both of y'all guys, man, for coming on and kind of like shedding some light on this, man. And it's really funny that you're saying, you know, as Travis was being funny, that, you know, there's really not a lot of black horror films that are out there. Technically, they're not, but I agree with you that probably what we need to do is do a separate show and look at the contributions of African Americans as they related to all these different films. And you could probably take it back, you know, which would be very stereotypical of us, but we could take it back to the 40s where you had the Mantan Moorlands and some of these other folks who would straight embarrass you, man, in some of these horror films with the antics that Hollywood had them doing back in the day, man.
Yeah. But you gotta do that. But, you know, and in that show, you gotta, like, have best first death, you know, best black scream, that sort of thing, and you got to have, like, the beauty contest with the actresses between all of the films. And that's an interesting list, because one thing you can say about horror films, no matter what the genre, is that there's very few of these films where the women are hard to look at.
Well, you know, and that's why I told you earlier, man, I think that Jada Pinkett, man, deserves some recognition, because she is one of the few, and I can't really think, man. I mean, Carol Speed, you know, starred in Abby, but she was half crazy a whole movie. But Jada Pinkett Smith literally carries Demon Knight, man. She is really good in that film, man.
Right. Yeah, she is.
She's really good, man. All right, gentlemen, so we're a couple of weeks away, and as I'll close on this note, man, I've been hitting a lot of you guys up, man. We're about less than 2 months away from award season, man. It's gonna be a very different award season for African Americans, man. Not just in mainstream films, but with these all brown shows that we do, man, or these sites that we have, man. What is the ramification, man? How are you guys going to start, you know, getting the audience ready, man, for what's going to be a very different year?
Well, I mean, from our perspective, I'm looking forward to Black Reel Awards, but from our perspective, as far as where we're going to handle the end of the year on blackboxoffice.com, is we're going to be looking at a lot of different brown contributions. There have been some really good films that have been in Spanish this year, and some excellent films that have come out of India this year, and some great films that have come out of Africa this year. And so while there's been an awful lot of complaining about Hollywood, there's been a lot of great independent contributions. Like, there's a film coming out next month called Ra One, which stars Shah Rukh Khan, who is the Tom Cruise of India. Akon has the lead single off of that soundtrack. And I think this is going to be a really good film. It's probably one of the better
sort of superhero genre films that have come out of the region. But there's been a lot of great contributions this year. You know, we spoke at the beginning of this year. I was not waiting on Hollywood to deliver anything good, and they lived up to their promise.
There you go. And Travis?
I'm just going to have a big blank page up on my site. There's going to be nothing on there. But no,
Occupy Hollywood. Punch Drunk critic is going to do Occupy Hollywood. Is that what's going on?
Oh, now, in terms of the mainstream Hollywood, which is generally my focus, there has not been a lot to really root for in terms of African American cinema. So I'm having to look towards filmmakers, you know, the Steve McQueens and guys like that, and look at their films instead. But I'm going to endeavor to check out some of the other African American films I might have missed that you have brought to my attention, Tim. So. That's my goal the next few months.
All right, man. I appreciate it, man. Love both of you guys, man. Travis, you stick around. Dal, yep. I'll be in touch with you, man. It's always a
All
pleasure,
right,
man, when you're on the
Thank
show,
you.
Bro.
All right. Thank you, later, Derek.
Talk to you. Take care, man. All right. We're going to take a quick break right now. We're going to come back and look at the week that is in film releases, the week of the cold opening. You guys, keep it where you got it. You're listening to Keeping It Real with Film Gordon. We'll be right back. Critics. Also online with us is the chief film critic for Fox 5 here in Washington, D.C. It is Kevin BDK McCarthy. And from the West Coast, my dude, I call him the mayor of San Francisco, the big O, Omar Moore. What's up, fellas?
I'm great, Tim.
What's up, people?
Hey, Tim, how you doing, dude?
Man, I wish I was great, man. This is one of the worst opening weekends we've had. I'm just being straight up, man. I'm not trying to sugarcoat it for the audience, man. Seriously, this is the week. Everything opened cold this week, for real.
Yeah, this is the lull before the storm. There's a lot coming out next week, and I think the week All after. Right. So this is kind of a lull. This is a bad week.
Well, let's look at the lull, man. One of the films that I'm not going to review because I didn't see it was Margin Call, which stars the recently come out of the closet Zachary Quinto, Stanley Tucci, and Kevin Spacey, a thriller that revolves around the key people at an investment bank over a 24-hour period in the early stages of the financial crisis. Sounds like it's good. It looks like it has a decent cast. I guess it's limited now, coming out of New York and L.A., maybe in D.C., probably in a couple of weeks. So we're not going to talk about that film. Another movie that's out national today, or actually tomorrow, and it's limited as well, is Martha Marcy May Marlene, which looks really interesting, and stars Elizabeth Olsen, Sarah Paulson, and John Hawkes. And basically it's haunted by painful memories and increasing paranoia. A damaged woman struggles to reassimilate with her family after fleeing an abusive cult So, again, haven't had the opportunity to see that. I know there have been tons of screenings, and I will check that out.
Great movie. Very good movie.
Okay. Okay, well, we're going to get back to that one. Now, Johnny English Reborn, seriously, dude? I mean, I'm not like a Rowan Atkinson fan. The dude just irritates me. He's kind of like the cinematic version of, like, fingernails on a chalkboard for me. Every time I miss Mr. Bean, all those little ignorant movies, I'm like, come on, dude, seriously? So we're not going with Johnny English, who goes up against an international assassin hunting down the Chinese premier. So we will pass on that one as well.
I saw it.
Yeah, good. Now, also, this next film, I am totally shocked that this movie is opening cold, but it did remind me of a film called Tangled when I saw the previews, and that's The Three Musketeers. Which stars Logan Lerman, Matthew McFadden, Ray Stevenson, and I think my girl is in this, Mila Jovovich.
Yep.
Hot-headed young D'Artagnan, along with three former legendary but now down in their luck musketeers, must unite and defeat a beautiful double agent and her villainous employer from seizing the French throne and engulfing Europe in war. This movie was not screened for critics. Did anybody, you know, sneak into something, see it at a junket? Anybody?
No.
Kevin, you saw it, didn't you?
I saw it, but I'm seeing it again tonight because I was really, really tired when I saw it the first time, so I'm going to check it out again.
I watched the first 5 minutes online earlier today, and I don't know why you're surprised this is opening cold. I mean, this is Paul W.S. Anderson. This is him remaking the Alexandre Dumas classic in Resident Evil style slash The Matrix style. It looks like garbage.
Garbage it is, which brings me to the next film, which is like the big film this week. And again, we just did a segment on black horror films. This movie right here represents horror in a very real way to me. And after watching the first two, there's no way I'm going to put this movie into my subconscious where I'm like Home Alone. Are you serious? Paranormal 3, Paranormal Activity 3. In this latest one, in 1988, young sisters Katie and Christy befriend an invisible entity who resides in their home. Now, I'm going to be real honest with you. I don't think that they're terrible movies. I just think, for who I am as a person, that I remember freaking out after watching the first one. Like, every time I was home alone and, like, the wind would blow a door, I was like, hey, hey. So these movies don't work for me. Omar Moore, the Paranormal Activity franchise, what does it mean for you?
Well, it means that every successive movie gets 10 times worse than the previous one. That's what it means to me. Unfortunately, I didn't get to see this one, but I saw the first two. First one magnificently done, and the second one very poor, and I have no reason to believe that number three will improve upon that.
Now, watch this. Kevin, tell us why this is the greatest franchise of horror movies since Saw.
Well, here's the thing. I thought the first one was amazing. The first one, I mean, I'm not. This is not shtick. I didn't sleep for 3 weeks. Right, correctly. I was waking up in the middle of the night. I could not go to sleep for a full night without waking up and seeing Katie standing over my bed, hovering over my bed with the time code in the corner. That freaked me out. So, you know, that was a movie that. And the thing about that movie that was so brilliant was that it was made for $15,000. It didn't use violence and gore and blood. It used aesthetics, and it used shadows, and it used cool little camera techniques to freak you out. And it was completely the opposite of the whole torture porn genre. I think that film really, really resonated with me in that angle. Second movie was terrible. I thought the second movie was just dreadful. It was a copy of the first one. Every single scare was predictable. Now, with this movie, the two guys who directed Catfish, they step in here and they actually brought a fresh angle to the franchise. Yes, it does still have very similar elements with the camera setups and everything like that, but they do kind of bring their own style to it. But they have this really cool technique called a fan camera. I thought they did a really good job of building suspense, but the scares in this movie, the difference between this movie and the first one is that you will not walk away from this film having trouble sleeping. It's more of a scary jump scare type movie where you're scared during the movie and you're jumping out of your seat, but the scares are not sustainable, they will not stay with you like the first one did. I still enjoyed it. It improved upon all the second film's problems. I gave it a 3.5 out of 5.
Travis?
Yeah, the thrill is gone with this one, unfortunately. I really did like the first one. I think the things they managed to do on a small budget, forcing you to really scare yourself is what the first one really does. I think that was genius. And then the second one was sort of a disaster. This one is not much better. Yeah, the Catfish duo came aboard this one, and I didn't really think they brought anything new to the table. The one angle they did bring was just the new camera, but that didn't really add all that much to it. It's the same non-scares as was in the last film. The occasional crashing chandelier, you know, the door slamming. It's all the same stuff. Nothing new is brought to the table. And for a film that goes back into the past and is really a prelude to the other two movies, there's nothing really revelatory here. It doesn't really connect to other two films correctly. There's just nothing that's provided in this one that makes it a must-see, in my opinion, unless you're some sort of Paranormal Activity enthusiast. So I think this one can be ignored.
See, here's my question. No. Let me jump in for a second, Kevin, because this is a point I want to make, and I think this is what bothers me about these sorts of films, is that I used to always get into discussions with our good friend Nell about this, that these were what I call cultural mistakes, that, you know, African-Americans watch these sorts of films. The way the horror genre is that they always put kind of like unnamed, you know, white kids in situations that to folks like myself just make no sense. And like the first Paranormal Activity, which I thought it was very well done because it scared the bejesus out of me, but it was like there were so many signs or so many parts of that film where like somebody who would have had common sense would have went, man, you know something's not right. I got to get the heck up out this house, man. What? Talk to me, Kevin, and I'm going to ask you because I know Omar and Travis understand where I'm going with this. I mean, is that one of the issues? I mean, do you find that to be an issue that, you know, you look at how I react or certain folks react to kind of these stories, the way Hollywood keeps putting them out there?
Here's my response to that. I think we... Everybody in this world who's sat and watches these movies, we have never been in that situation before. We've never been in a situation where a ghost is coming into our room and taunting us, or a demonic possession is taunting us. We have no idea how we would ever react to something like that in our real lives. So, yeah, we can all sit there in the theater and look at the screen and make comments and think that the characters are stupid and that they're making the wrong decision. But we have no clue what we would do in that situation. So, again, I feel like, you know, you can say that they make dumb decisions, but, I mean, until you're actually in that position yourself, I don't know if anybody has the right or wrong reaction to it.
I would say this. When I was younger, on Halloween, every year we would go and we would seek out that one really decrepit old, quote-unquote, haunted house, and we would go and get in there and go to the, you know, to the cellar and all that stuff, walk around. As soon as I heard a weird noise, man, I was out. I bawled out. I was halfway down the street. I know what I would do in that situation, but I don't know about anybody else.
Omar?
Yeah, you know, it's comical. It really is comical. And that's a key part of what suspension of disbelief is supposed to be about. But it's difficult to do that because you almost think, you know, these guys are stupid enough to investigate something that's plainly obvious that you don't want to go anywhere near. They deserve to be killed. I mean, that's my – I have so much contempt. I have so much contempt for those types of characters that I don't – shed a tear when they actually do get offed. So that's just the way I feel about it, Tim.
Yeah, what about a film like Halloween? Like, I mean, the characters in that movie are stupid, but everyone still loves that film. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
everybody makes dumb decisions.
If a dude with a hockey mask and a knife, dude, take off and run, man. Play or run.
The best movies make it easier for you to suspend your disbelief. It's just, you know, but the movies that aren't doing an effective job, you sit there and you wonder about stuff like that. You know what I mean? You wonder about if people didn't leave.
Can I ask Travis one question?
Well, we're running out of time. You can ask him a question, but you're going to ask it over the music, man. As I said, you got every week. See, comes in at the movie and don't listen to Kevin, you know how you will react, man. Run! Run!
On Facebook, Kevin.
Oh, man.